This is the Photography Podcast on photography.ca, episode number 106, all about white balance and why snow is sometimes blue. Hey there, photo lovers. How's it going? And welcome to the 106th Photography Podcast on photography.ca. My name is Marco, and as always, we're coming to you from Montreal, Quebec, Canada. For today's show, we're going to do a podcast on white balance and why your snow is often blue. And this podcast comes courtesy of a suggestion from Kat from our photo forum. So thanks so much, Kat, and we're going to get into it shortly. Before we do, I always like to thank people for their last comments on podcast number 105, where we talked about bouncing flash like a pro. And Rob VE, Isak, and Robert TV in Edinburgh all left comments, and they're greatly appreciated. Favorite zone to get them is right in the blog, makes them easy to find and credit people. photography.ca/blog. Thanks so much for those comments. They really help keep the podcast going. A couple of podcasts ago, we did a podcast on backing up images like a pro. And quite a few people felt sorry for me, so they recommended this program called SpinRite, which they said was just amazing. So I already spoke that I hadn't tried SpinRite, but since then I did try SpinRite, and I must say that I think it's made for more technical people. I'm not convinced this is for your average user. If you've never opened up your computer, it might not be for you. You might want to get adventurous, but you might not. Basically, when you use SpinRite, you have to attach the dead drive to the inside of your computer directly, which is not the end of the world. But in my case, it didn't actually work until I mucked with some settings in the BIOS, which is also something that I'm not super familiar with. I'm not afraid to do stuff, but some stuff gets me a little more nervous than others. Anyway, after playing with it for a good 4 hours, I did not get it to work. It would not read my drive. My drive is simply too dead. So I appreciate all the people that recommended SpinRite. And I must say, the SpinRite did give me good email support, but they offered no phone support. And for people that are at the same computer level as I am or lower, phone support would be really, really useful. But I must say, I did have it for about 5 weeks, and the guarantee was only for about 4 weeks. And when I sent them an email to tell them that it wasn't working for me, without any hesitation whatsoever, they refunded my money. So I must thank them that way for their great customer service. But in my case, it did not work. I do want to give a special shout out to Alan Levine of Georgia in the USA. Super, super, super friendly guy. Because SpinRite didn't offer phone support, Alan just really helped me get this underway, and he tried so hard to make it work. He wanted it to work for me. He really did. But at the end of the day, the drive was just too messed up. Anyway, Alan has been a computer guy, and he's been a wedding photographer for years, but that part of his life is winding down, and he's so nice and friendly and so concerned with helping his fellow Americans that he's actually running for Congress. And because he helped me so much, I really want to help him a little bit. So really, please check out AlanLevineForCongress.com. I'm Canadian, so I don't have much to do with American politics, but I did read through AlanLevineForCongress.com, and I agree with everything he's saying. He's so open-minded. He's so logical about things that if you wanted to support him in some way, I know he'd appreciate it. And because he's helped me out, I'd appreciate it too. So do check out AlanLevineForCongress.com. Let's get right into our main topic, which is a white balance. And for those that don't know, right, white balance refers to the white in a photo that may sometimes take on a color cast depending on the light source illuminating the object. Now, every light source has a specific color temperature, and these are measured in degrees Kelvin. And we studied a little bit about Kelvin back in the high school days when we talked about absolute zero and stuff like that, but it's just a way to measure color temperature. And if you get familiar with it a little bit, it's really, really helpful, actually. So let's continue. So as we said, objects lit with different light sources will appear to have different colors. You know, if you bring a white baseball outside in the cloudy day, or you bring it into your house and look at it, you know, under your light bulb, it will look different, and it will take on a different colored cast because different light sources with different color temperatures are lighting that object differently. Now, our eyes are fantastic at neutralizing the effect of these different color temperatures, but our camera sometimes gets it wrong. So the act of neutralizing any color cast is called tuning the white balance. And snow is a great example because everyone that has seen snow, because everyone that has seen snow knows that in pictures, it sometimes looks blue, even though intellectually we know that snow is white. Now, non-photographers that look at these pictures, they may not even notice that it's blue because the eye is going to correct it for them. But photographers tend to notice colors a little more, and that snow is blue because cloudy light is blue light. The color temperature of a cloudy sky is blue. On the opposite end, the color temperature of candlelight is very orange. It's very warm, and things lit by that light will take on an orange cast. Just after sunrise and before sunset, the light is very, very warm. And under that light, the white snow will appear to have a warmer cast versus being lit in the middle of the day under cloudy conditions. And in a very similar way, many fluorescent tubes give off a greenish light. You may not notice it, but your camera can notice it sometimes. Household tungsten bulbs often give off a warm orangey light. Sodium vapor lights from the street often have an orange cast. And the cast from like bright sun at noon or the cast from a portable flash on your camera is rather neutral. So you probably won't notice color casts or notice very minor color casts under those conditions. Okay, let's go back 20 years for a few minutes before we go forward. When we used film, basically there was no automatic white balance. We had to match our film with the light source. And most people I know shot with daylight balanced film. And it was good in the daytime, obviously, and it was good with flash, obviously. However, going back to snow for a sec, even though we may have shot the snow in the day, if it was a cloudy day, the snow would have taken on a blue cast. Now, it was possible to correct this to a certain extent in the lab, but only to a certain extent. When you correct one color in a lab, other colors are often affected. So yes, you can color correct these things a little bit later on, but it's much better to get it right at the beginning. So in those cases, you know, skilled nature photographers, they knew this well. So they would filter out some of the blueness by physically putting on a filter over their lens. And the filter that they would choose would be the opposite color or the complementary color of the color of the cast. So because a cloudy day has a blue color cast, you would put a warmer color filter over your lens to neutralize this effect. And we're going to get into digital shortly, but it's the same principle. So at the end of the day, whatever light source is lighting your object, that light source has a certain color temperature. In order to neutralize that color temperature, you are going to use the opposite color. It was done in film and in digital, the same principles hold, and we're going to talk about them shortly. But to keep going with an example, if you were like a sports photographer and the arena was lit with fluorescent light, you actually used a magenta filter, a pinkish-like filter over your lens because magenta is the opposite of green. And you did this again to neutralize the green cast. The other main film type we used was tungsten film, and this was primarily used by studio photographers because they used continuous light sources, as opposed to flash sometimes, they used continuous light sources, and they were often tungsten-based. The warmish color of tungsten is still used today in the incandescent bulbs that most of us use in our homes, and it's still sometimes used by studio photographers. Anyway, instead of using a filter in those cases back then, we just had the film balanced to tungsten. And the two main types of films that were balanced were daylight film, which was used like the vast majority of the time, and occasionally a tungsten film if you wanted to play around or you were a studio photographer using tungsten lights. Then it obviously makes sense to use tungsten film. Anyway, thank goodness we don't need to use these physical filters as much as we used to. The vast majority of us are shooting digital, and the vast majority of us will never need these filters anymore. In the digital age, we use the camera's computer to help determine the proper color of objects that we photograph. And the program or the software or the algorithm that runs the camera's simple computer is still based on these exact same principles. And that's because the color temperature of the light sources that we used 20 years ago has not changed at all. You know, the sun's color under a noon sky hasn't changed. Cloudy sky temperatures haven't changed. Candlelight hasn't changed. It hasn't changed at all. So, you know, how do you control this? So personally, I use like automatic white balance most of the time, like about 85%, I'd say. The other 13%, I'll use, let's say, some of the camera's other presets and white balance settings. And then 2% of the time, I'm going to take a custom white balance. And we're going to talk about each of these for a little bit shortly, but why the 2%? Because it's so easy to make color corrections in post-processing if you're shooting in the raw format. You know, and the vast majority of like hobbyist photographers and enthusiasts, they can get away with making these corrections, you know, in RAW, in Photoshop or Lightroom or something like that. But where these color corrections are truly crucial, this is like product photography. You know, they need extremely accurate color. You know, if you want to sell a shirt and it's a chartreuse green, then it better appear chartreuse green in all the brochures and stuff like that. So in those cases, you really, really, really have to be very careful to get accurate color. And then if for whatever reason you want super accurate color, you should be able to get that color as well. So we're going to talk about a few ways to get really accurate color, and it's really not that difficult. One caveat, though, that I want to talk about right away, and this is really important, is that sometimes when we remove the color cast from an image, sometimes when we try and neutralize, when we get too technical, sometimes we kill the photo. Sometimes we suck all the life out of the photo. You know, late sunrise and early sunsets, our eyes expect them to be warm. They should be warm, because the color temperature of that light is warm. If you try and eliminate or neutralize the cast from that light, you will have sucked all the flavor out of the image very often. So now that that caveat has been spoken, let's talk about correcting the white balance. Okay, so just to state it again, like almost everyone I know uses automatic white balance the vast majority of the time because it's so good under most circumstances. You know, and it's going to vary a little between Nikon and Pentax and Canon and stuff like that. It'll vary a little bit, but most people of all these major cameras, they're all saying that they really like the white balance most of the time, and it's good under most circumstances. But when it gives you an off result, you want to be able to correct it. And there's a few things you can do, and possibly one of the most rapid things you could do is just change it to another preset setting that better matches the light source that you are shooting under. My camera is the Nikon D700, and I have 9 settings. I have the automatic white balance, which takes into account color temperatures of 3500 to 8000 Kelvin. I have the incandescent balance, which is approximately 3000 degrees Kelvin. I have the fluorescent balance, which has a really wide range and one of the reasons I don't like it. I have a direct sun, which matches approximately 5200 degrees Kelvin. Flash matches approximately 5400 degrees Kelvin. Cloudy, about 6000 degrees Kelvin. Open shade, around 8000 degrees Kelvin. Then you have the Kelvin setting that you could just input the color temperature of the light source that's lighting your object if you know it. And then finally, there's the custom setting where you take a measurement of your scene and you feed it to the camera and it neutralizes the cast for you. And I find personally, I'm not a product photographer and I can get my color accurate enough for me, you know, that when I switch settings from the auto white balance to any of the presets, I'm usually quite pleased. And then if there are yet additional adjustments that need to be made, you know, I use Photoshop for almost everything anyway, and it's really easy to tell, you know, Photoshop, you know, what tone in the image should be white or black or gray, and you can neutralize the cast that way, and we'll talk a little bit about that later. But anyway, back to the presets. If you understand what the presets are doing, and we spoke about this just a few minutes ago when we were talking about the old-fashioned filters, when you understand what those presets are doing, you can use them, you know, to get corrective or creative effects. So, you know, when used under their suggested light source, they correct. But all that these settings are doing are basically removing warmth or coolness from your scene or adding warmth or coolness to your scene. That's it. Now, of course, you can also use these presets creatively to deliberately warm up or to deliberately cool down your scene as opposed to just neutralizing the cast, and that's getting creative. And we're going to talk about this right here, right now. Let's take the cloudy preset, for example. Under cloudy conditions, it works really, really, really well. Now, what you have to understand is that cloudy skies have a bluish color temperature. In order to neutralize that bluish color temperature, basically the camera introduces yellow. You don't see it happen, but the camera is introducing yellow into the background. Why yellow? Again, because yellow is the opposite of blue. Cyan is the opposite of red. Magenta is the opposite of green. And it's the RGB photography color wheel. You could look up color wheel. I'm going to put some links in the show notes that show diagrams of this to make it easier for you. But basically, to neutralize the color cast, you introduce the opposite color. So again, to neutralize that blue under a very cloudy day, the camera is introducing some yellow in the back end. Now, what if you're not shooting under a cloudy day? Well, if you're not shooting under a cloudy day and you choose the cloudy setting, you are going to make your scene warm. And boy, that's bloody creative. Anytime you want to, you can have a warm scene at the flick of one button. That's sometimes the beauty of these presets, is you could see drastic changes really, really quickly. And as long as you kind of understand what the change is going to do, there's no issue. You know, if you get too warm or too cool, you could try another setting that makes more sense, or you can correct it in post. But at least you have some very quick creative solutions right at your fingertips on every single scene that you shoot. Now, just so this makes more sense, I should say that I've done a series of tests using different objects under different lightings and controlling them using different white balance presets, and I'm going to put these in the show notes. So you're definitely going to want to check out the show notes to clearly see the differences that I'm talking about. Now let's talk about the open shade setting for a sec. So the open shade setting is for shady areas like under a canopy of trees. And this is lovely light for portraits. And the color temperature of open shade is even cooler than cloudy skies. So if you shoot this with the automatic white balance, it might get it right, but it might still be a bit bluish. If you switch it to the open shade preset, chances are it will introduce enough warmth to neutralize that cast. Now that's the corrective use. If you want to make something really, really warm and you've not shot it under open shade, it's going to make it really, really warm because it's introducing quite a bit of yellow into your scene to compensate for the bluish color temperature of open shade. Hope this is making sense. Anyway, again, there's going to be like a diagram in the show notes, but the higher the color temperature, the bluer the color, and the lower the color temperature, the warmer the color. Now, if we want to talk about the sunlight and flash white balance presets, these are going to be less noticeable in your pictures if you want to use them creatively, because the color temperature of those lights are way more neutral than, let's say, candlelight, which is very, very orange, or the open shade that we just talked about, which is very, very blue. You know, the sun under noon light, it's pretty neutral, doesn't have much of a color cast, and neither does, you know, portable flash. If the automatic white balance isn't working for you and you're shooting under those conditions, switch to them, see if they give you a better result. That's the corrective aspect. And the creative aspect, if you want to warm the scene just a little bit using all the other types of lights, these two will add just a bit of warmth. In terms of fluorescent, I don't use that a lot because it covers a really wide temperature range, so I never use it. I would much rather just do a custom white balance, which I'm going to talk about shortly, in cases of fluorescent light. The next setting I want to talk about is the Kelvin setting, and this is a great one to study a little bit because you have pretty fine control when you use the Kelvin setting. So let's say it's an overcast day. This has a rough color temperature of around 7,000 degrees Kelvin. So if you know that, you could just input 7,000 degrees, or it's not actually 7,000, it'll be close to 7,000. The values of the Kelvin available to your camera, just get close to the average temperature. It may not give you the exact temperature. But anyway, when you use the scale, the same principles apply. If you go to 8,000 degrees Kelvin, because that type of light is bluer, it's going to compensate for that blue, and it's going to make the image warmer. If you go to 6,000, which is warmer than 8,000, it's going to try and neutralize it and make it cooler. Now, Kelvin is a great setting to play with, again, because you can make more subtle changes to the scene. And you could use it correctively if you know the color temperature, as mentioned, but you could change it in more subtle gradations, either warmer or cooler. So it's a really good one to use. Start to like try and memorize, you know, six color temperatures, you know, that we've spoken about. Try and memorize the chart that I'm going to put in the show notes, just a little bit. It's just six or seven objects. And that way you kind of have a base in your mind, and you could input on your camera the value that's closest to that color temperature, and you should get very, very, very close. And if you're off, you can move it up or move it down to make it warmer or cooler. I forgot to talk about the incandescent bulb. The incandescent bulb, you know, that's like a tungsten bulbs in our house, you know, those can also, of course, work for you creatively. If the automatic white balance isn't working for you, you could try that setting and it'll likely work better than the white balance, or use it creatively. You know, incandescent or tungsten is warm in color temperature, so to neutralize it, it's going to add blue in your scene, which is the opposite of warmth. So if you want to cool down a scene, if you want to give the scene a very bluish feel, might work well for subjects in the winter, might work at any time where you want to add coolness into a scene, you could just turn it to the incandescent setting and you're going to add cool, creative blueness. For really accurate color though, you're going to want to do like a custom preset. And it's so simple, and yet it's like such a source of confusion for many people. All a custom preset does is it takes a picture of a known tone, like a gray card or a white card, and it takes a picture of this under the exact light you are shooting under. So this feeds the camera valuable information. The camera knows what tone mid-gray is or white is when you tell it so. In these presets, you just fill the frame, let's say, with a gray card or a white card, and the camera knows that you're doing this because it's in the instructions in the manual, which you should also read if you get confused. But anyway, so once the camera knows that it's seeing white or it's seeing gray in order to neutralize those colors. And basically, I did some tests using the custom presets on various household objects in single light sources and mixed light sources. Mixed light sources are going to be harder. They're going to trick your camera more. Plain shade or one light source is not as difficult to correct for as two light sources. So I did a couple of tests where some objects were being lit by clouds and being lit by a tungsten bulb. And then I just did some tests where they were being lit by one light source, and the effects are as I described them actually. But I want you to see the effects with your own eyes. So do take a look at the show notes and do play with your camera and these settings at the end of this podcast. And basically, in order to get these custom presets, I use two things. I use a gray card, and a gray card is just the tone that most cameras are balanced for. Most cameras try to determine the overall exposure based on mid-gray, and you can also use white. So anyway, in my particular case, I basically took my camera, I put it to the custom setting on the white balance in order to feed the camera a custom white setting, and all I did was I laid it under the light that I was shooting under, filled my camera's frame with that gray, and I took a shot. That's all there is to it. And it works very, very well. And then the other method that I used is I bought an Expo disc. I never had one before, but I heard it was really, really good. And I thought I'd like to try it specifically for this podcast, actually, because I thought it would come in handy in the future. So the Expo disc is really easy to use. It costs about $100 versus a $12 gray card. But basically, it's kind of like a cap that you put on your camera. And instead of like filling a gray card with it, you basically either shoot from the camera's position, or you take a picture of the light source itself. And you'll do one of those things, depending on a couple of different scenarios, but the results were very, very, very close anyway. So again, using the Expo disc, basically it's the same as an incident light meter. So it measures the light falling on your subject, and it's able to neutralize it really, really well. It's a completely neutral disc, and it's able to neutralize the color. So it just makes perfect sense. It does the exact same thing as an incident light meter, except it costs $100 for possibly a $10 piece of plastic. But it works really, really well. Sometimes we pay a high premium in photography for objects that work super well and are super easy to use. And I must say the Expo disc was very easy to use. And I must say, in terms of the results, just comparing the three main ones, automatic white balance versus the Expo disc versus the gray card, the automatic white balance got me very close under mixed light, but I still noticed a cast. But both the gray card and the Expo disc completely eliminated the cast. And in my tests, I even actually included a gray card so that I could pick out the gray tone if I wanted to in the computer. And I recommend that you do this as well. And I'm going to talk about that shortly. But anyway, at the end of the day, I photographed different objects using different presets, and I tried to neutralize the cast or make them warmer or cooler for creative effects. And you could see all the pics in the show notes. I should also tell you that for this test, I actually used two cameras. I used my Nikon D700, and I actually had the Canon T2i that I borrowed from a friend of mine just to see if it did similar things. And in general, it's doing very, very similar things. Some presets might favor a warmer tone or a cooler tone by a small margin. But at the end of the day, both cameras were really, really good with their white balance. They were really, really good overall with their individual preset settings. And they were both really, really good with photographing a gray card or using the Expo disc to feed the camera this custom white balance. Now, once the camera has this custom white balance, there's nothing else you need to worry about, you know? As long as you're shooting in the same lighting condition, you can pop, 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 pop. Just keep shooting away. Your color is going to be really, really, really accurate. In terms of using the Canon versus the Nikon, it took like 1 minute. It was like really easy. The Nikon might be just a little easier because it doesn't actually take a photograph. It just feeds the information into the camera. And basically how the Nikon one works is you just turn it to the custom setting, you press the white balance until the word pre flashes, then you take a picture of the gray card or you use the Expo disc on top of your lens to take a picture of the light source, but you're not actually taking a picture as mentioned, you're just feeding this information into the camera, and then it'll tell you if it's good or no good. It'll say good, no good. And if it's good, you just keep shooting. The Canon, on the other hand, actually does take a picture, and then you inform the camera which picture you want to use for your custom white balance, and it conveniently chooses the last one you just shot, and then you're ready to shoot in the exact same way. And it's like a minute's worth of reading your manual to figure out how to do this if what I'm saying doesn't make clear sense. And just for 2 secs, the pros and cons, you know, Expo disc versus gray card, they're both going to do the job. A gray card is $12. An Expo disc is about $100. But a gray card you have to physically place in your scene. Now, some scenes, that may be a hassle. Some scenes, yes. Some scenes, no. You know, if you're shooting outdoors, let's say it's a field, you might not have anywhere to place that gray card. It might be very windy. You know, in those cases, might not be the best tool to have, especially if you're alone. You can always rig something up, but might not be as convenient as the Expo disc. The Expo disc is always convenient. You're paying for its convenience and you get what you pay for, but in terms of the results, they're going to be almost identical. So for those of us that may not want to spend the $100, a smart thing to do is something that I do, is I always have like a mini gray card with me. And maybe this thing is the size of a playing card, or maybe 1.5 times the size of a playing card or a hockey card or something like that. Anyway, I just carry one with me in my bag at all times, and that way, you know, if I'm shooting, you know, in a certain area for a while, I could just introduce that card into the scene, take one shot of it as mentioned, and again, that way my camera has a known value, and I could feed that into Photoshop or Lightroom later on and just choose that gray card, and it's going to do the balancing for me. So, you know, in combination with a custom white balance, you're going to get very, very, very accurate color. And I dare say it's going to be good enough for 99% of the people. I'll talk about the 1% shortly. Another smart thing to do before I forget is shoot RAW. You know, RAW, as people know, has, you know, more information than a JPEG. So, you know, you can more easily correct for terrible color casts if you shoot RAW and you muck up versus shooting a JPEG. Those people that know what they're doing, you know, photojournalists that can't be bothered doing RAW, they can't be bothered with major file sizes that are shooting, you know, really, really fast and have to transfer their photos really, really fast. They may want to get that color in camera as good as they can. But I know for, I'd say the vast majority of people I know, they're processing their own images. And very easy to do, to choose one image and say, that's where my gray tone is, and then use that same correction for the next 500 images. It's very, very easy to do. Of course, there's the learning curve with the photo software, but once you get past that and you know the basics, it's very easy to learn how to do this. So overall, I just want to re-say that I'm pretty impressed with auto white balance in general, how easy it is to use to play with the color. The only re-caveat I'll give again is that, you know, when you want to neutralize that color, sometimes you kill it. You suck out all the life of the scene and the scene becomes sterile. So use it, but use it with caution and know that sometimes when you use it, your eye might not like the results. You will likely have neutralized the cast if you've done it right, but your eye may not love it. So just know that in advance. And the only other last tool that I really wanted to mention is an actual color meter. So this was the 1% of people I was talking about. If my livelihood depended on the best, most accurate color, I would get a color meter. And basically they measure the exact color temperature of a scene in degrees Kelvin. So all you need to do is feed that value into the Kelvin preset setting and you're golden. And they can also easily allow you to emulate the looks of other lights. They are the Cadillac of color profiling tools and getting the most accurate color temperature. And if you're willing to spend about $1,200, you can get one. But if you're a fashion photographer up and coming and your day rate is like somewhere between $5,000 to $10,000, then this is a fabulous investment that you will love. But the vast, vast, vast majority of us will never need one. And I believe that's all I got to say about that. As always, if you feel that I've left out something or something was unclear or you have something to teach me, something that I've missed, I love to learn. So please, please, please just post a comment straight in the blog. Favorite way to get it, photography.ca/blog. Alternatively, you could just shoot an email at photography.ca@gmail.com or you could join the forums and post a comment that way. Always great to meet new people in the forum. We're a really friendly bunch, as I've said many, many times, but it's true. And people like friendly environments because it fosters learning. So if you're lurking and you haven't joined, I encourage you to join. Before I forget, if you're in Montreal or you're planning to come to Montreal and you'd like some one-on-one instructional time with me, I've started doing photo tours of Old Montreal in particular and other areas of Montreal. Old Montreal is fantastic. And during these tours, I share loads and loads and loads of tips to help you improve your photography. So if you'd like to learn one-to-one, that service is offered at markokulik.com. The link is going to go in the show notes. And I typically add time to the tour. It's usually about 2 hours, but I'll usually add a little bit of time. I'm not really fussy. You get 2 ebooks with the tour. You know, you could send me emails. We could chat about what you want to learn. I make it my business to make sure that people understand new concepts. So I'd love to meet with you and offer a tour if you're in Montreal. And those details can be found at markokulik.com. In terms of assignments this month, we're at the beginning of a new month right now, so we don't have them in mind, but by tomorrow you should be able to check the show notes and we should have them chosen by tomorrow. And I think that's going to do it for me in this White Balance podcast. So I highly recommend that you start using these settings if you've never played with them. If you've kept your white balance on automatic white balance exclusively, now is the time to play a little bit. Take down a little piece of paper, mark down warmer color temperatures, cooler color temperatures, get out there or stay inside and shoot some different scenes and play with those settings. But whatever you do, keep on shooting. Bye for now, everyone. Thanks so much for listening.